From the moment I saw her, leaning against the rail, looking out into the night, I knew I had to save her. Hey, miss, this way to the lifeboats.
What? Oh, the lifeboats? You're not serious.
Why, yes, as a matter of fact, I am. This way, come. It's bad, believe me. Oh, but she had already run back to the ballroom. I quickly made my way to the lifeboats and jumped into the last one, just as it cast off. I was safe, but I wish she'd come with me.
And we hope you'll come with us now on The Lifeboat Show, here on Coast Community Radio. The content and opinions expressed on The Lifeboat Show are solely the responsibility of the producers and are not the expressed opinion of KMUN, its board of directors, or the Tillicum Foundation. This program was pre-recorded.
Welcome aboard. I'm Christopher Patton, and with my co-host, Karen Black. We're about to embark on The Great Turning 101, another chapter in our series on personal actions you can take towards living sustainably.
Living sustainably means living lightly on the earth. Such a lifestyle requires more than achieving self-sufficiency or more than joining in community. It requires quite literally changing one's mind, looking at our world through a different lens. For example, a lens of cooperation and community rather than competition and corporate business, adjusting the way we look at ourselves and our lives and our livelihoods. If you've ever arrived home on a Friday night, tossed down your keys, put up your feet, and thought to yourself, this is nuts, you're part of a growing number of people worldwide who are asking themselves whether there isn't a better way and are beginning to look for one. These people are part of what's being called the Great Turning, away from corporatism and dominance toward community and cooperation.
Psychologists Joanna Macy and David Corton, a former official of the World Bank, have both popularized this term. Joanna Macy, in her writing and workshops, explains, "The Great Turning is a name for the essential adventure of our time, the shift from the industrial growth society to a life-sustaining civilization." David Corton, in his book, The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community, says, quote, "We face a defining choice between two contrasting models for organizing human affairs," unquote.
To live sustainably, self-sufficiently, means to turn away from the rat race, that struggle to work our way up or just to stay afloat. Stress, busy schedules, dealing with the things we think we need to have or have to do, and of course the debt that comes with it, you know, normal life. It seems crucially important, but does it have to be?
60% of adult Americans are overweight or obese. 2/3 have problems sleeping. But exhausting, stressful, and expensive as it often seems, if we turn away from our non-negotiable lifestyle, what do we turn toward? Today, our special guests, Donna and Kevin of EarthStar, can make a strong case for both the emotional joys and the physical health of the simpler lifestyle. They can definitely help those who are attempting to make the transition.
EarthStar Primal Habitat is a demonstration model based on their personal experience of creating an alternative, sustainable lifestyle of voluntary simplicity with all the basic comforts. They have achieved their goals with very little money in order to prove that it is possible to live a rich, satisfying life with such practices as biogenic diet, building a simple shelter, organic gardening, studying herbal healing, recycling gray water, composting humanure, catching rainwater, and minimizing fuel consumption.
They write, quote, "The benefits that we are now enjoying from living this simple holistic lifestyle are vibrant health, confidence in our ability to provide our basic material needs without struggle, and the intuitive knowledge of nature's ancient wisdom about living responsibly in harmony with our environment," unquote. Donna, Kevin, welcome to the Lifeboat Show.
Hello.
It's an honor to be on your program.
Thank you for being with us.
Yes, glad you're here with us. Donna, Kevin, our culture teaches that simple living is ascetic, Spartan, and, well, painful. You know better from personal experience. First, tell us why. What prompted you to change your lifestyle, and what's the point, as you explain on your website?
Well, I guess the simple answer is we felt motivated to change our lifestyle because we were both miserable. There was a book that we read recently called The Tao of Equus by Linda Kohonoff, and she says it really well. She writes, "The ones who lead comfortable lives rarely make a move toward change. It's the ones who've been most profoundly betrayed by the system who are ready for something new."
Mm.
Not only were we miserable, in 1992, our lives actually blew up. We were both going through divorce. We were both in poor health. And I actually suffered a major illness. I lost my job. I went bankrupt. And all this happened in the same year. I think my deep unhappiness stemmed from the fact that, for me, the American dream wasn't working anymore. Donna and I used to talk for hours about trying to find this essential meaning in life, and we wanted to feel connected to God and the earth, but we had no idea where to begin. I had friends at work that used to criticize me and make jokes just because I wanted to live simple.
Hmm.
And I realized it seems like there's this strange spell on people because it felt like I couldn't communicate with them. And my values were starting to shift toward the earth while they were still interested in buying stuff and making money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a funny thing happened. One day, I got a letter from the Social Security Administration, and I opened it up, and I found this statement of lifetime earnings. I'm looking through it. It said that I actually had earned over $300,000, and I was 33 years old. And I couldn't believe it. I didn't have any of it. I didn't have a home. Here I was sick. I didn't have a job. And my life was a wreck, and I had spent all this money, and I didn't know it. I was just living what I thought was a standard life. I didn't think I was excessive at all, but when I look back and I see how I'm living now and the choices I was making then, I was blind to it, and I was making excessive choices.
When I was growing up, my parents didn't buy anything unless they had saved up enough money to be able to pay cash for it. Those days are long gone. We don't tend to buy things that way anymore.
At that point, I was totally unaware. And after that, I said, if I can make this much money and not think about it, what can I do if I think about it?
Exactly.
Well, it was at that point I lost it and I hit bottom. Mm. And I knew I could not play this game anymore because the entire struggle to earn money just to keep my head above the water just seemed so senseless and empty. Now, one night I was talking to Donna and I said, you know, we have got to find a way to live differently. No, actually what I said was, I don't want to pay this electric bill anymore. And she thought, what do you mean you don't want to pay the electric bill? That sounds crazy. But she agreed with me. And so now, I guess, what's it been, Donna, 14 years?
14 years.
We're here, and we're debt-free, and we have this paid-for little hut in the woods. We've got great food. We've got our health. We're having fun, and we have a cheap electric bill. And we're together at last.
That sounds beautiful. Well, what did you find most difficult about leaving your old life? I know there were a lot of things wrong with it. Still, we've got what Kunstler calls a psychology of previous investment. How did you cope with the loss of changing that lifestyle?
Well, I used to tell Kevin that I felt like we were immigrating to a new country. It was an unknown country. It didn't even have a name. It seemed like we had set sail and there was no turning back. We were so scared. But I kept saying, all I know is that we can't not do this.
I went through a lot of anger and fear, and I remember going through a period where I couldn't even eat or sleep for a week.
Mm.
And the most difficult thing of all was we were going at it alone. We were trying to change our lifestyle with no sense of community. We had no model to follow, no understanding from our friends and family. In fact, I think they were embarrassed for us. But there was two events in my life that really helped me cope and get me through it. One was a chance meeting with a Native American elder. His name was Thundercloud. This man was so kind to me. He knew intuitively that I was going through a major change in my life, and he sat down and talked to me, encouraged me. And what he said, I'll never forget. He said, if you want to cross over this great gulf into this new world, this unknown shore, you've got to learn how to improvise and adapt. Wow, improvise and adapt. I mean, it was like a light went on my head. And the other experience that helped me cope was my dark night of the soul, thanks to the Social Security Administration. That experience allowed me to understand that the present society that I was living in operates dependent upon consumerism and profit. And it was clear to me that the only direction that that system could ever go is a way of exploitation of the resources of the planet. And when I understood what was really happening in the world, I was able to get this focused determination on extracting myself as much as possible because I wanted to minimize my involvement in that game.
Where are the dreams that we once had? This is the time to bring them back. What would the promise say? Caught on the tips of our tongues. We forget or forgive. There's a whole lot of life waiting to live. When one day we're brave enough section of the heart.
And that's Kenny Loggins singing about conviction of the heart. This is the Lifeboat Show on Coast Community Radio, and we're talking with a couple who are living conviction of the heart, Kevin and Donna Johnson of Earth Star. Donna, I want to address this to you. I do want to underscore that psychologists will tell you when you're leaving a job or moving or ending a relationship, finishing school, milestones like these in our lives represent also a type of loss. Anytime we end something and move on to something new, it's important to recognize that we may react in ways and at levels we hadn't expected. For example, we may have trouble sleeping for a while, or we could feel irritable or depressed for what seems like no reason. These are normal reactions as our bodies and psyches adjust to a new situation. What advice can you give to smooth the transition time from one way of living to the other and stay healthy and positive?
My advice would be to work slowly on reducing everything and cutting back in every area of your life. And I would say go on a material fast. That is, get rid of at least one-third of what you own. Maybe convert your unnecessary possession to cash, give it away, or give it to your kids. Then it's smart to develop some practical skills before you make a move, like gardening, basic carpentry, simple diet, budgeting, getting out of debt. Those are all things that you can do right where you are before you ever even think of walking out the door. If you've cleared out all the excess clutter in your outer life, then you'll have some space in your mind where you can see things clearly and you can make better decisions. One of the first things we did, which we talk a lot about in the articles that we've written on our website, is to change your diet. You know, everybody has to eat. Change your diet and clean out the toxic chemicals in your brain. We wanted to build a very small house and only keep the absolute essentials that we needed to be comfortable, because we knew we weren't going to have a lot of storage space. Favorite quote of mine about possessions is from Black Elk. Each thing owned takes a measure of spirit from the owner. And when you give things away, that measure of spirit and power is returned to the giver's body. This was really true for us. When we lightened our load and got clear about the basics of life, we felt really strong and empowered.
We eliminated all these unhealthy false pleasures that were draining our energy and resources, replacing them with what we call the true values of life. I was very surprised to read the Greek philosopher Epicurus. He called these true values our eternal companions. He said, these eternal companions are the enjoyments of all the beautiful things in nature, the mountains, the forests, the oceans, the colors of the sunrise and the sunset, all that is beautiful in man's creation, like the great books and the great music and the great works of art and friendship and love. He said, the wise man shall have as his program of living the gradual replacement of the false pleasures with our eternal companions, the noble pleasures of life. I think in this country what we have to do is connect the dots of what's going on in the world so we can make these intelligent choices. And that means to realize that we are being bombarded daily by electronic waves from microwave towers and satellites. And like Donna said, our brains are toxic from all the chemicals in the food we've been eating, all the drugs we've taken since we were children, all the impure water we're drinking, the impure air we're breathing. We're flooded constantly by a sea of inferior currents of thought just from the mass consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only effective way to counteract this onslaught is by using the ancient knowledge of cosmotherapy. That is, to expose yourself to fresh air, filtered water, organic food, sweat, air bath, exercise. In our online free manual, we have a description of cosmotherapy.
So, Kevin, Donna, do you ever miss living the way you used to?
Well, do you mean, do we miss being miserable? No, not at all, because we were both very unhappy living the way we used to. And ever since the day we met, we have longed for the time to be home together like we are now and work on our health and our peace of mind and creative projects and things that we enjoy. And we also wanted time to contribute in areas that we feel passionate about.
I definitely don't miss working a full-time job. I mean, it's great to have time to relax and discover my own biological rhythm and work on creative projects. I don't miss having to have a large house and endless expenses and maintenance and too many family obligations and social obligations and credit card bills and those high electric bills. I mean, the list could go on, and I could never go back to that kind of insanity. And Don is right. I mean, we're happier and healthier now than we ever could have imagined. But I think what you're asking is, do we miss having enough money to eat out and go traveling and go to movies and parties?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In the first several years, we were so busy building that there was no time for a social life. And at the time, I was still commuting to a full-time job, and it was a 95-mile round trip every day.
Wow.
And I was away from home 55 hours a week. But I needed to keep working to earn enough money to buy materials and pay off this property.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a sacrifice and a hardship for us during those years. And we didn't even have time to spend together, and we couldn't eat like we wanted to. The garden was still being set up. And along with going to work, every weekend I'd come home and we'd have to start clearing and preparing and building up our Earth Star primal habitat. But, you know, I think the way that it should work is that you're supposed to inherit a piece of land from elders who also live a life of true pleasure. You have to grow up in a community that has already worked out a sustainable lifestyle, a place mm-hmm. where there's fruit trees and they've already worked out the systems of how to eat and prepare food and store it. Like in the days of Zarathustra, go back 8,000 years ago, it worked like this. The parents would have a child, and they would plant one fruit tree every year for each child that they had. And by the time that child was 19 or 20, he would be given a piece of land with trees on it, and he was already set up. But nowadays, we send our children off to an institution for 12 years to get a formal education, and then they go to college, and most time they end up $50,000 in debt by the time they get out.
Right.
Donna and I had to grit our teeth for 10 years. And now the building is finished and we have time for fun and creativity and we know how to entertain ourselves without spending a lot of money. We have time to write and share what we've learned about simplicity. We have a wonderful opportunity with the website to interact with people who contact us. And now we're also playing music gigs, and that kind of gives us a social life.
What do you play?
Acoustic folk music.
And what's your instrument?
A guitar.
And Donna?
I'm his groupie, and I just go everywhere with him to keep all the ladies off of him. He's just so cute, you know. He might get nabbed up by somebody if I'm not there.
We'd like to remind you that you're listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 Astoria and KTCB 89.5 Tillamook. Simulcast on coastradio.org.
This is the Lifeboat Show with Karen Black and yours truly, Christopher Patton. For more information, resources, and courses, please visit our website at www.lifeboat.postcarbon.org, or you can email lifeboatshow@charter.net. Editions of The Lifeboat Show are archived on www.globalpublicmedia.com. That's www.globalpublicmedia.com. Now back to our special guests, Kevin and Donna Johnson of EarthStar. Tell us about your website. You just mentioned that.
I think the easiest way for people to find it is to go to their favorite search engine and just type in EarthStar, that's one word, Primal Habitat, EarthStar Primal Habitat, and it'll go right to the link of our page. I'd like to say that our website was created and maintained by our dear friend Jerry Brutel, who gave his time and talent to freely make our information available. The website has practical information about creating a lifestyle of voluntary simplicity, and most of all, reconnecting to the living current of life.
Kevin, Donna, you've told us the why. Now, can you get into some of the nuts and bolts about the practical things of how you made your transition? You said it took you several years to do this. You said you left certain things behind and took certain things on. Let's get down to the specifics. How did you decide where to start? That's one of the most difficult decisions. And what did you do first?
Well, the first thing we tackled was actually the hardest. And it's the one thing that people do not want to hear. And that is, we decided to improve our health by changing our diet. Donna was very sick for like 27 years with chronic fatigue syndrome, and I was 50 pounds overweight. And I knew that if we were going to downsize, that it was going to be impossible for me to work hard with a toxic body. So while I was still working as a draftsman, we both got interested in raw foods and later biogenic nutrition. And after 6 weeks of applying ourselves to that discipline, Donna was completely well, full of energy, and we were both walking 4 miles a day. So anyone who has read the articles on our website, they know that we stress that changing your diet is the essential starting place. Food is the foundation of life, and it either breaks you or liberates you. There's this rippling effect that occurs when you simplify your diet. When you eliminate fast food, junk, and all the costly processed foods, and you go back to simple raw fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds and whole grains, you eliminate a lot of wasted energy, a lot of wasted time and resources. And then, after I bought the property, I started to build a small cabin so we could store tools in and that we could camp in on the weekends. It was a beautiful little cabin. It was 10 by 12. It had a sleeping loft in it and a gravity-fed shower and a sink, and it only cost us $3,500 to build, but it felt like home. And we installed our rainwater system. We set up a humanure composting system, our gray water system, and then Donna began the garden. I was thrilled to finally have the security of a home, even if it was only a shed in the woods. We were able to pay the land off in 3 years.
Describe to us the turning point when it started to pay off.
Boy, this is a great question. The thing that's so neat is that opportunities just show up whenever you need them. It's not how much money you earn that's important. It's how much time you have to spend working just to make enough money to be happy. Most of the people that I know have no clue how much money or how many things they need to actually feel happy. So they work, and they feel stressed out. So then they go and they treat themselves to new clothes and a new car, and they eat out a lot, and they spend lots of money going on vacation. Well, we never go on a vacation because there's nothing to vacate from. I guess we live on vacation. And after we paid everything off, we knew we still needed to earn some cash, but I just couldn't sacrifice my health for the sake of a full-time job anymore. So I got interested in learning how to make my own sourdough bread. And before long, I was baking some really great naturally fermented whole wheat bread in a mud oven that I built. And then friends started coming along, and they would say, hey, I'd like to buy some of that bread. And so that generated some income. And then later, another guy came along. He was interested in making films of old skills. So we made a film, and then we wrote an article about it, and then videos got sold, and that brought some cash. I guess the point I want to make is when you get in the flow of this living current, your ordinary life starts to support you. It's amazing. We've learned how to make soap, do plumbing, electrical wiring, carpentry. We even know how to do bookkeeping. I sell rustic benches and artist easels out of scrap lumber that people throw away. We're playing music now for tip. And Donna, tell them what you're doing.
Well, I sell plants and flowers, and I trade vegetables for eggs and milk. And we do a variety of part-time work several days a week. People like to hire us because we're mature and reliable.
We work cheap.
Yeah, we work cheap. We can work cheap, you know, because we live cheap. It really feels just wonderful to be able to rely on our own ingenuity and creativity instead of being chained to a career.
Donna, on the website, you talk about herbal healing. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what you've learned since your transition?
Well, there's times that we find that herbs are necessary to boost our immunity. Especially during the cold and flu season when everyone around us is sick, you know, with sore throats, coughs, and fevers. So we keep some basic herbs on hand, such as echinacea, garlic, ginger, elderberry, and we use a lot of golden seal. We grow the herbs that thrive in our climate, such as echinacea and comfrey, and we buy the rest in dried form by the pound.
We rarely get sick anymore, except for an occasional muscle ache from chopping wood. I can't even remember the last time I had a cold. You know, you're out in the sun and the fresh air and the rainwater and the healthy soil and the exercise. If we do need stitches or if we have an accident and need serious first aid, we have put aside emergency money to cover that. As healthcare gets more and more unreachable for people, the only answer is to take up a healthy lifestyle and learn the ancient wisdom of natural healing.
Tell us a little bit more about some of the practical things you did so that you would have a limited footprint. What are some of the things you incorporated?
We've done a lot of little things to achieve a modest electric bill, like putting a timer on the hot water heater, replacing the standard light bulbs with those new LED bulbs. We've reduced our refrigerator to one of those small under-the-counter types. We use a clothesline instead of a dryer, and we heat with wood. The first priority to me about simple living is to get clear of what is the minimum that you need to be comfortable and happy. But when you live like Don and I do, you look for creative solutions to these things, like handling gray water, for instance. We just run the pipe out of the sink to the mulch beds and let it water the plants. I mean, we don't need a tank. For $10, you can buy yourself a couple of pieces of scrap lumber and a bucket and make a really nice rustic sawdust potty, and it works great. There's always a cost-effective, easy, creative solution.
What do you do with the humanure? Do you use it on your garden, or do you recommend keeping it for a year or two before they use it in the compost? What works for you?
We read Joe Jenkins' wonderful book called The Humanure Handbook. If anyone is interested in doing this, he explained how to do it, what to use, and how to go about it. And you let the pile sit for 2 years so all the pathogens are killed and it's safe to use.
Well, actually, you build it for a year and then you let it sit for a year.
Yeah, right. But we do use it on the garden and we use it on our trees. In addition to our humanure, we throw all of our kitchen scraps. When we weed the garden, we throw the weeds on it. And sometimes we even pick up extra leaves on the side of the road that someone wanted to send to the landfill.
And yes, there's no smell.
Absolutely, there's no smell.
Could you mention the name of that book again?
The Humanure Handbook.
Joe Jenkins?
Yes.
Can you tell us about your discoveries, your teaching, and the materials you have available for folks?
We have a lot of articles on our site about all the practical aspects, and we also have a free online book called The Subtle Way and Its Power. In that book, we wanted to share the things that worked for us. It's something that we could have used when we were starting out. We made a lot of mistakes, but we learned from everything. So hopefully someone in need might stumble across our information and be inspired to live differently.
If you can do it and we can do it, anybody can do it, right?
We think so.
On our website, we've listed 10 changes that a person can make. Print out that list.
Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Diogenes said it best. The only real freedom is in the minimum of need.
Look to nature for the way out of the trap that we've created. The answers are there. Think small. Eliminate everything that's unnecessary. Eat simple food from the table of the earthly mother. Without a doubt, speaking from our own experience, when you're on a path like this, all the support you need will be there when you need it.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, thank you very much, Kevin and Donna.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. It was an honor.
Join us Monday morning, October 16th at 9:30 for The Psychology of Denial, here on The Lifeboat Show. Stay tuned now for Lost Highway, coming up at 10. You're not going to make any jokes about denial being a river in Egypt or any other bad puns, are you?
No, are you kidding? I'd never do anything like that.
Nothing about the state of denial being the only state where you don't have to pay taxes?
Now, why would I say something like that?
You're not in denial about your bad puns, are you?
What bad puns?
What do you mean, what bad puns?
My puns are good.
Carol Newman got to you, didn't she?
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, you're just in denial.
Not me.
Not me?
Not I.
Yes, you.
No way.
Yes, way.